The seven of them met about attacking Payson and who would stay behind to defend the neighborhood. Dev had caught wind of the plan somehow and insisted he was healthy enough to go along on the action to liberate the town. It had been Kelly who'd come up with the most interesting idea. What if they tried to break some of the Payson men out of jail to help? They even had extra guns to distribute, the ones they'd taken off the men they'd killed a few days ago. When they had talked everything over, Arch drove to the other neighborhood alone to talk about it with the others, a white flag flapping from the rear window in a prearranged signal. After cleaning up from the lunch her father had made for the two of them, Sierra went over to Jones to see if Rudy needed any help with the little kids. As she walked into the yard, she jerked back in surprise when she saw Emily outside. She was tying the shoes of the littlest kid, the girl the man had carried around as a human shield. The little girl ran off when her shoes were tied, and as she began to interact with another child, Sierra felt a moment of relief. The little one seemed to be recovering from her ordeal. She was smiling. Rudy led the kids off toward the woods, and Emily stayed behind and watched them, no smile on her face. Misha was also left behind, and she looked longingly at the children as they marched off in Rudy's wake. When she turned to see Sierra, she brightened up. She ran up.
"I have to stay at home and work, Mom says."
"Makes sense. You have a lot of mouths to feed. They depend on you.
Will you help me collect eggs? I'm still afraid of the hens."
"Where's your mom?"
"On guard."
"It's very grown up of you to do what she says. Where's Rudy going with the kids?"
"He's teaching them about the woods, he said. He said he's part Indian. Do you think that's true?"
"Could be." She walked toward Emily and smiled at her.
"Hi, Emily. It's good to see you out. Do you want to help with the eggs?"
Emily shook her head and turned for the house. It was an improvement in her behavior. She didn't run, but walk. She didn't smile, but she didn't look quite as terrified as she had. She made it to the deck and then turned and raised her hand in farewell. To Misha, Sierra said, "Has she been spending time in the closet a lot?"
"Not much. When it gets noisy in there, she does."
"That many extra people must make it crowded."
"It does," Misha said. "But Mom says we have to be nice. They've been through a hard time and we need to make a home for them for now."
"After tomorrow, some of them might be able to go home to their families."
"All of them?"
"We don't know for sure."
"I kind of would miss them. It's like being in school again."
"I hadn't thought of you being lonely like that," Sierra said. But she probably had been feeling isolated, especially with her sister locking herself in a closet.
"Ready to check the hens? I want to start with the nesting bird."
Jasper loped along at Misha's side while the girl asked questions.
"Isn't the hen going to be mean?"
"Maybe a little, but only to me. I won't make you do anything. I want to check her eggs."
"Why?"
"To make sure the chicks are all still healthy in there."
"How do you do that?"
"I'll show you, but you have to promise not to try it on your own. I don't want you pecked." She also didn't want her driving the hen off the nest or harming the eggs. Fertile eggs had never seemed so precious before. When the Payson raid was done, if she survived it, she'd have to get a couple of her own hens on a nest so the chicks could be used in trade with the other neighborhood. Inside the musty coop, she found Mitch's egg candler. At home, they used an LED flashlight, but Mitch had gone top drawer with everything he bought.
"This'll be the last time we need to check them," she said to Misha. "Why are you checking?"
"To see if there are any quitters."
"Quitters?"
"Chicks that quit developing. If you leave those eggs, they'll go bad. You don't want them smelling bad or contaminating the nest."
"You mean they die? Inside the egg?"
"They can." Sierra had seen one egg the last time she candled that she thought was not going to make it, but she'd check every one today. You never knew. "We need to make sure none are cracked and that we can see the little guys in there."
"Will they look like chicks? Are they cute?"
Not very. She approached the brooding hen and made soothing noises even before she opened the brood box. The hen made a curious sound. Sierra snuck her hand under the hen and pulled out the first egg before the hen knew what was going to happen. There was a slot in the candler. She flipped the device on and put the egg into the slot, then held it out for Misha to look at. See? This is a good egg. That dark part is the chick, and those lines are blood vessels. We'll put it back and work around the nest.
Wow,
she said. One by one, she checked out the eggs. One hadn't developed, and she put it aside. Another one had the telltale blood ring of a quitter. She showed it to Misha and explained.
It died?
Misha said. She sounded upset. Sierra thought it was odd that she could be upset at the death of a chick hen. So many had died this summer. So many people and dogs and cats and horses. Of course, Misha didn't know that, did she? She hadn't seen much violence firsthand. She hadn't had to shoot anyone. Her mother and sister had experienced violence firsthand, but not Misha. Sierra found herself mildly irritated at that. How could anyone have been so protected? But then a part of her was relieved. Relieved that Misha had been spared what had happened to Emily, or what had happened to the kids Rudy was babysitting. Maybe that part of what she felt was what her father felt about her. On the other hand, Misha was 10 years old. Sierra was grown. You couldn't keep a person 10 years old forever. These days, trying to protect a kid from all knowledge would be a dangerous choice. So Sierra didn't hesitate to tell Misha the chick had died. These bad ones go into your compost bin. Here, you take them out there. Don't forget to close the gate. She put the last good egg back under the hen and told her she was a good girl. She always did, though hens weren't probably smart enough to understand praise or insult. She found the wire basket, and when Misha came back, she made her do all the egg collecting herself, pushing her to do the work despite her nervousness around the hens. It's the only way to get used to doing it, she said at the end. You have to keep doing it. Ignore your fear. The worst thing that could happen to you is getting pecked, and usually they won't draw blood. It hurts. There are a lot of things that hurt worse. Going hungry, for one. Do you keep the eggs inside? When we had extra, they were in the shed, but now we don't have extra. Are you going hungry? Sierra and Pilar could spare some eggs. Soon she'd have cockerels old enough to slaughter, but not quite yet. She left the girls to do their gardening alone and went to find Joan. When she found her, she got right to it. I agree with you about Misha's not being ready to learn how to shoot, but I'd like to have a chance to teach Emily, if she'd be willing to be around me. Oh, I don't know, Sierra, Joan said. Maybe it would help her. Would it? Well, think about it. I or Kelly would be best as teachers. At least offer her the choice, would you? All right. I'll do that. Sierra started to walk away, but then turned and said one last thing. Every girl deserves to know how dangerous she can be. She returned home to clean her rifle, her father's rifle, the shotgun, and his handgun. She counted rounds of ammunition and grew worried when she realized how many they had already used. In the future, she'd have to pick her shots more carefully. If they kept using rounds at this rate, before the year was out, they'd be down to throwing rocks at enemies. Looking at the empty space where boxes of ammunition once sat, it seemed more important than ever to Sierra to deal with Payson so that they could stop threats from coming up from the valley, and so that Payson itself wouldn't remain a threat to them. At supper that night, Pilar said, "Before we eat, I want to apologize to you. What I said to you the other evening, about me becoming hard and unfeeling? Not unfeeling, just the other. Becoming a warrior. And not your little girl anymore? You'll always be my little girl, even when you're 50.
I was thinking today about how Misha has been so protected through all this, and wondering if that was a good thing or a bad thing. She wouldn't be able to survive on her own. If Joan died, both of those children would be in trouble. They would. But we'd take them in, right? If Joan dies tomorrow? Sierra hadn't stopped to think of it. Goodness. All of them? All 11? She looked around the kitchen and tried to imagine crowding that horde in here. I don't think my cooking is up to it. I was thinking only Misha and Emily. Those two? Sure, I'd take them in. I have a lot I could teach them. Good, because... I guess I need to apologize for this, too, for saying yes before I consulted with you. But Joan asked me today. To take them if she dies? Yes, if she doesn't come back from Payson. Okay. Sierra couldn't be irritated at him for saying yes without asking her. She would have said yes, too. But I don't know about taking 11 of them. If everything goes well tomorrow, I'm hoping the extra 9 get back to their relatives. You have pictures of them all on your phone still? Yes. You should take your phone, in case this plan works. You can start hunting for their parents the instant the city is secured. Joan has them on Mitch's phone, too. She didn't bring hers along from her house, thinking there was no reason to have it. Okay, I'll take mine. Food's getting cold. Can I eat? Sure. Go on. He toyed with his plate, a hamburger and oven fries. So, am I forgiven? I forgive you. And you aren't wrong. I've changed. I guess I was like Misha once. I'm not today, but that change makes me more likely to live through the next couple of days. That part's good, isn't it? Very good. I'm sorry, too, for yelling at you. There was no reason to hold a grudge, and every reason not to. She might be the source of his worry over her soul or whatever, and she didn't see any way around that. But she didn't want to die and leave him regretting how they'd left things between them. You're the best father I've ever known, and not just because you're my father. You're objectively the best of all I've ever seen. He shook his head at that. Honestly, I have no idea what I'm doing. Ever. Then you fake it pretty well. Now eat.
Chapter 9. Jailbreak, Arch said. Sierra was in the car with him, Kelly, and Dev. Kurt and Joan were in a second car, an attacker's car that had four-wheel drive. Pilar was at home, defending the neighborhood. Rudy was babysitting the kids, who had no idea they might be going back home to Payson by tomorrow. Joan had not wanted to get their hopes up in case the liberation of Payson was a failure. Kelly said, I think a jailbreak is from the inside breaking out, hun. This will be breaking into jail. Arch nodded. The trunk has some confiscated weapons, except ones that I really liked and wanted to keep for us. You understand you're all going to carry 2 weapons and give 1 to one of the men you break out of jail.
We remember, Sierra said.
I won't be with you, of course, Arch said. I'll be outside of town with the walkie-talkie plug-in to the cell phone. Wes will be leading the big party, heading into Payson from the north.
Sierra had heard it all before, at least twice. She changed the topic.
You're both feeling okay, Kelly? You and Dev?
Kelly said, I suspect Devlin has a headache he's not admitting to, and I'm still sore all over, like I wrestled a bear. But I can run and shoot, and that's all that matters.
I'd rather we were all healed up, me included, and Pilar too, Arch said. But I don't want to wait that long. I think this is the best time. They'll be confused about their missing men, hoping they'll return. They'll be talking about that and about our supposed dawn attack in 4 days. If we're lucky, they'll be arguing among themselves over what to do and disorganize because of it.
That's a lot of hoping, Sierra said. Pretty optimistic for you.
It is the best-case scenario, he said. But I don't think it's impossible, or entirely wishful thinking. that there might be some disorganization, maybe even dissent in their ranks. That's to our advantage.
Sounds right to me, Dev said. And there's no way they'd anticipate that we'd be going straight for the jail. That's a bold move.
If I knew which women were good shots in town, I wouldn't have suggested it, said Arch. But we can't start knocking on doors and asking. On the other hand, I suspect the men they jailed were exactly the ones able to use guns. The good fighters may have mostly been killed, but surely some of them ended up in jail.
And there's one problem, Dev said. Sierra turned to face him. He was frowning.
What?
Maybe they never jailed the men. Maybe that was a lie to keep the women in line and growing food.
It took Sierra a second to see where he was headed. You mean they might all have been executed?
I wouldn't have, in their position, Arch said. I'd keep them alive, in case an unpleasant job needed doing.
As slaves, you mean? Kelly said.
Or as cannon fodder, like they used the children, Arch said. Put them out in a line in front in order to get to somewhere else, like up at Flagstaff's roadblock. Shoot one in the back when he makes a run for it, and the rest might cooperate. But yeah, we're basing the jail raid on a hope rather than a fact. We don't know for sure that any Paysonites are still alive in there, Kelly said.
Which is why we're only committing 4 to the raid.
Who except us? Sierra said.
Us 3, Dev said. You, Mom, and me, plus 1 volunteer from the other group.
Don't take Tad, she said.
Why not? Said Kelly.
At the same time, Arch said.
I wouldn't. I don't get a good feeling about him.
That's accurate in my opinion, Sierra said. Wes would be great if he'd go, but anyone he picked would be fine, I imagine. Who's our team leader?
Me, Kelly said. If whoever joins us from the other neighborhood has military experience, I'll take his advice on the raid itself. Otherwise, it's me because of my having been to the county complex several times.
You were never in jail, right?
Sierra said. She was teasing and everyone knew it.
Ha, Dev said.
Her?
Complained about a property tax bill. Dealt with some other minor government hassles, that kind of thing. But the jail is right there by those offices.
What's it like there?
I looked around to see if we had any brochures or anything with a picture of the buildings, but we didn't. So without the internet, all I have to show you is a map I drew, which might not be entirely accurate.
She handed it over the seat back.
It's pretty open. Lots of parking space, wide streets.
Sierra took it and said,
so finding cover is an issue.
She studied the map.
We don't approach on the street, Dev said. He put a finger on the map and traced a short line.
We come in this back way if we can.
His finger moved.
If it's blocked, that way for Plan B.
How close are we going to risk parking to town?
Sierra said.
Something to discuss with the others, Arch said.
3 minutes later, they pulled into the forest road that led to the other neighborhood. Sierra noticed Dev looking unusually tense, and then remembered he'd been shot at near here. Remembering he hadn't had a chance to talk to any of the others yet, as she had, she said to him,
they're okay, a lot like us.
Uh-huh, he said, as if it was yet to be seen. The car pulled in a couple 100 yards and parked. A minute later, Joan and Kurt pulled in behind. Sierra said,
I'll get out first.
No, said Arch. Let's wait until we see a car. I'd hate to make their guards nervous.
So they waited. It wasn't long before the first car came up the road.
Just one?
Sierra said.
Surely not,
Kelly murmured. Wes emerged from the car and raised his hand. Sierra opened her door.
Hey, Wes,
she called. Another car appeared, and then a line of them. 5 more cars drove up as she approached Wes and offered her hand.
Good to be working with you again.
Not with me personally. This is Jackson. Jackson? Sierra Crocker.
She didn't correct him.
It might be time to give up on having her own name and just accept her father's.
Easier for everyone, herself included. She shook hands with Jackson. I hear you're quite a soldier, he said.
And that's nice of someone to say, but like all of us, I'm only doing what has to be done. Surviving, you know?
Couldn't agree more. Are you leading tonight?
No, Kelly is. She waved Kelly and Dev over. She has a map.
Good. Let's talk about this.
The four of them put the map on the hood of Wes's car and went over the approaches. Kelly described the place in three dimensions the best she could.
We have one guy who's been inside the jail, said Jackson. Drunk and disorderly, he says. Then he shook his head. Kills me not to be able to look that up and verify it these days. But anyway, he drew this.
And he pulled out a folded piece of paper, an official blueprint.
Wow, looks good, Sierra said. Did he really do that?
No, we have a drafter. Mostly used computer stuff at work, but still knew how to do this from his training. Anyway, you're right, it looks good, but I can't swear to its accuracy. There were locked doors here and here, as the drunk guy remembers, but he also said it was all electric locks, so unless they're generating electricity now, they must keep guards on the doors.
Or they've managed to put in regular lock sets, Kelly said.
Probably not, we decided. They aren't in any way normal doors. They might have been able to do something, put in a hook and chain on the door, something like that. Or they might all yield to keys, designed that way in case of a power outage.
Hope they aren't using big chains, Dev said.
I brought heavy-duty bolt cutters. They're still in the car.
Do they weigh a lot? Sierra said.
Oh, yeah.
We're giving him another rifle to carry, too? She asked Kelly.
What's that? Jackson said.
Kelly explained about the confiscated weapons.
Jackson said, I can manage that much more weight. Also, if we can kill a guard or two, we'll have yet more weapons to give out.
He had a doubtful look on his face.
I hope we don't get shot for our trouble by the men we free.
Kelly said, I would imagine they'd be grateful.
If they exist, said Dev.
Sierra explained Dev's concern.
Jackson nodded. I guess it could be an empty jail. In which case, it should be damned easy to get into, right? And then we can clear the town, from the jail to the south end.
Kelly said, If all the men are dead, we can find women in town to use the rifles. It'll take time, but better to have four more weapons on our side when we hit the street.
I'm guessing a third of the women in Payson can shoot. That's about what it is in our neighborhood. Jackson said, or was, before this happened.
100% in ours, Sierra said. Except the Kershaw girls, Dev pointed out. Town is different, Kelly said. Maybe one in four women will be good with a rifle or handgun. Sierra said, So that would mean knocking on 16 doors to find the four we need.
Jackson said, Or four doors, or 100. Make sure you don't knock on a door where an invader is staying.
Sierra hadn't thought of that. Maybe we should have Joan with us. She knows where people live.
Used to live, Kelly said.
Right. Okay, I can see the problems with this.
Sierra shook off the disappointment she felt.
We may not need to do that anyway. Or when the shooting starts, they might come running and beg to help. Maybe some saw the flyers and have been talking with neighbors. Who knows?
We can't know, agreed Jackson. We'll get to the jail, try and get inside, and see what we see. Wes said you've worked out your own signals?
Let's teach you those while we have time.
And for the next 10 minutes, that's what they did. Jackson was a quick study, but he finally held his hand up.
That's all I can remember without confusing myself.
It's enough. We should probably work in two teams of two anyway, Kelly said. I mean, we'll go in all together, but should we be separated, we should try to stick with a buddy, someone to watch our back, give us cover, tend to a wound.
Sure, I'll go with Sierra, if that's okay, Jackson said.
Sierra had no sense whatsoever that this guy was looking at her as a piece of meat,
as Tad might have been, so she nodded. She hated that she'd been reminded of it, but at the same time, she was glad Kurt had said something about Tad. Going on a mission with a guy who was distracted by thoughts of sex would be dangerous, but Jackson seemed focused, professional, and reliable. "Goodbye, me," she said. "If Kelly approves." Kelly said, "We'll see when we get down and assess the situation."
"Okay, people," Wes said, raising his voice over the crowd's murmur. "Let's gather around. I want to go over the night's plan again, make sure we're all on the same page."
Sierra figured that meant he'd already been going over it with his own troops. Wes explained. They had planned a 3-pronged attack. They'd be going in on 2 fronts about a mile apart, on the northwest and northeast sides of town. The jail was almost centrally located, 1 mile to the south of the main intersection.
"We stick to cover. No losses." He raised his voice. "When the jail team releases men to fight, remember the danger of friendly fire. We might have 3 different teams coming at each other. Those of you with night scopes, know your targets. No one shoot at a woman. A woman is statistically likely to be a friendly. Try not to get separated."
Someone close to him said something in a quiet voice.
"Right. While there may be a few female collaborators from what we've heard, at this point, I think it's likely they'll lay low and not pick up weapons. I'd rather err on the side of caution, so no shooting at women or children."
Kurt spoke up, his odd, deep voice easy to identify.
"Before, in our neighborhood, they used children as shields. If they do that again, it'll be a problem."
"Right. If that happens, be sure of your shot. If you have the skills and equipment, take headshots. If not, fire an occasional shot over their heads. Keep them pinned down and engaged."
He had more to say, and Sierra listened, but not much of what he said applied to her. He was talking to his troops, and to Joan and Kurt, who would be going with them.
"How will we know we've won?" asked a woman.
"Nobody else will be shooting at us," Wes said.
"What about if they surrender?"
another woman's voice asked. Francie, Sierra thought.
"Don't trust them," a man shouted.
"I wouldn't trust them," Wes said. "The other problem is, what do we do with them after surrender? Take them prisoner?"
"Yeah, then drive them out of town 50 miles and let them out," Francie said.
"If you can safely subdue a man with his hands up, if there are no other people around shooting at you, do it," Wes said. "Otherwise, just take him out."
Sierra thought it would be far easier to get rid of such a person permanently. 50 miles wasn't far enough. 500, maybe. Well, it wasn't her call, not for the group. For herself, though, she thought if any enemy began to raise his hands overhead, she'd shoot him dead before they cleared the level of his shoulders. Problem solved.
Wes said, "Okay, I think this is a good enough plan. Things will happen that are not in our plan because that's the way luck goes, and we'll adjust the best we can. By dawn, let's make sure the people of Payson have their town back in their own hands."
Scattered cheering and applause greeted his final statement. He shook some hands as he made his way over to their group.
"You 4 ready to roll?"
Kelly said.
"We are."
"Watch each other's backs. Don't get hurt."
He shook Kelly's hand, and then turned away as his name was called.
"Let's go, Mom," Dev said.
They walked back to the car where Arch waited. Kurt trotted over to wish them well, as they put the spare firearms into their packs. It made the pack heavier, but not intolerable. Once they were done, Arch hugged his wife and shook his son's hand. His reserve with Dev made Sierra roll her eyes, and Kurt caught the look. He smiled at her.
"Be careful, okay?"
"You too."
"I'm in a big group. I'll be less exposed than you will be."
He put his hand on her shoulder and gave it a squeeze.
"But you've got this," he said.
"I've had good training," she said, nodding at Arch.
"Bolt cutters," said Jackson.
He went to retrieve them and carried them over to their car.
Can I try them?
Sierra said. He handed them to her, and she nearly dropped them. They were so unexpectedly heavy.
Whoa.
She gave them back to him.
All yours. Glad I'm not carrying them.
They climbed into the car, and Kelly drove in a tight circle and headed away from the meeting place. Sierra turned and looked out the rear window at Arch, who was watching them leave. She saw his expression shift as they drove away, from resolute to anxious, and then she faced forward again.
Chapter 10 Dev stretched his hand and looked at it. It still ached from his father's handshake. A desperately hard grip, you could call it. He couldn't always read his father, not anything but his anger. But the strength of that grip hadn't been anger. He thought his father had been saying with it, "Take care of your mother." And Dev would. He was glad the two of them would be paired as buddies, because he didn't want to let her out of his sight anyway. He'd failed to protect her from the grenades. He didn't want to fail her again. From the passenger's side, he watched her face as she drove through the deepening twilight. Her hair was tied back and pinned, and it made her look more severe, older. He wondered if she was feeling as sore as he was from the grenade explosion. His head still ached, but it was a low-level pain, nothing bad enough to keep him from the fighting. He'd been able to snatch aspirin earlier today, and had taken three right before they left home.
What?
She asked.
Me?
He said.
Yes, you. What are you thinking when you stare at me like that?
Hoping you feel okay. How's your arm?
I'm fine. I'm not 100%, and I doubt you are either, no matter what you said. You can see all right, though, can't you?
Yeah. My eye feels a little dry, but I see perfectly fine.
Your depth of field okay?
He looked out the window, but it was hard to say in this light.
I think so. I'd have noticed before if there was a problem.
He fingered the stock of his rifle.
Of course. I only need one good eye to shoot.
If you can't see in three dimensions, it'll be hard to pinpoint where people are.
Both eyes are okay. But even if I wasn't fine, wouldn't the fact that a man looked only an inch tall kind of clue you in that he was far away?
Don't be a smart aleck, she said, but she was smiling.
Yeah, those one-inch invaders, they're really a problem.
Who raised you again?
Some lady. Forgot her name. Smart, organized, good shot. Could be nicer, though. She laughed.
What?
Sierra said.
She'd been talking with Jackson in a low voice.
Nothing, Kelly said. Dev's just being a pill.
What's that even mean, a pill?
He said. Are pills funny? You see the aspirin telling jokes in the bathroom?
You okay, Dev?
Sierra asked.
Yeah, I'm fine, he said.
But he did feel a little strange. He wasn't sure where the inclination to tease and joke with his mom was coming from. It wasn't his usual style. Just too much tension, maybe. And a desperate desire to break it. Tonight was important to them all. Important. And dangerous. His good humor fled.
I'm going to pull up pretty close to town, his mother said. When I stop and we get out, don't slam the car doors. The interior lights are already turned off. I want to drive slower in a few seconds. Everybody open your windows and listen for voices or footsteps or any sign of danger. And keep a lookout for people. For guards, I mean. He opened the window. The odor of pines was strong, but there was another scent on top of it.
You smell that?
Yeah, Sierra said.
Smells like it could rain tonight.
Finally, Jackson said. But is that going to be good for the operation?
Shh. Dev's mother said. Listen. The electric car moved quietly as she drove slowly, and they all strained to hear any sounds above the scratching of tires on pavement.
Are those footsteps?
Sierra whispered.
Dev tensed, listening, but then he relaxed.
No, that's a flammulated owl.
It switched just then to its soft hoots.
There.
Sorry, she whispered. False alarm.
Then no one said anything for many minutes. His mother drove more and more slowly. The last of the light faded from the sky. They were all so intent on listening for small sounds. They all jumped when a crack of thunder sounded. Moments later, his mother pulled off the main road and steered the car toward the south side of town. She stopped within sight of the first house, turned off the car, and pocketed the key.
Ready?
She whispered. Jackson opened his door as an answer. Sierra whispered,
Yeah.
Dev reached for his mother's arm and gave it a squeeze. They all exited, leaving the doors open. Everyone had their rifle in hand and a spare weapon in their pack. Dev had on his night hunting gear. Sierra was in all black, her hair tucked up under a baseball cap. Jackson had an army surplus backpack, with the handles of the bolt cutters jutting out over his head. His backpack was the lightest colored thing any of them wore, and the other three faces were all pale. You could only see them from close up, with no moonlight to shine off them. The sky was socked in with clouds. A flash of lightning behind the clouds to the northeast lit up the sky. In the brief illumination, Dev checked the street ahead. No one was out. His mother started to walk down the street, and he trotted two steps to catch her and fell into step. Behind, he heard Sierra and Jackson fall in. Dev kept scanning, side to side, looking for any danger, but nothing stirred, not even a curtain moved in a window. Either people couldn't hear them from inside, or they'd trained themselves to suppress their curiosity. In two windows was the faint glow of candlelight or lamplight through thin curtains. His mother held up a hand to slow them at a cross street. She pointed Dev to the right, and she turned to face left, crossing with a sidling step, keeping watch to her left. Dev mirrored her. In his peripheral vision, Dev saw Jackson turning to check behind them. Excellent. It was odd to be working with an unknown team member, but Jackson seemed to have good sense. They passed through the intersection without incident, and through the next. At the third cross street, as they approached, his mother hissed briefly and came to a stop. Dev stopped too. He heard footsteps, not close, but not far enough for comfort. It might be some citizen walking a dog. But then he remembered what Sierra had told him weeks ago when Mia passed by. Dogs had been eaten during the first weeks of the hunger, by their owners or by thieves. The footsteps were fading. His mother held up her hand and motioned everyone to stay still. She edged forward by herself, her rifle up. She stopped and used her scope to look up the street. She kept watching while Dev waited anxiously. Then she lowered her rifle. She held up two fingers. Two men, another minute of silence, and she waved them forward. The middle of the block, she whispered to Dev what she had seen. Night patrol, two men, rifles. Dev wanted to hear more, but he knew not to talk more than was necessary. The next block, his mom veered right at a Y intersection. The following block, she turned left onto a new street and waited for the others to catch up.
Lights off to the right. Sierra whispered.
Dev looked, expecting to see headlights, but he saw a glow in the sky, and then he heard the faint hum of a generator.
Diesel, Jackson said.
Dev wondered how he knew, but he suspected the man did know. Whatever the power source, the sound plus the light meant people. The enemy. His mother waved them all closer.
That noise is in the direction we're headed. Maybe they keep the jail lit,
Sierra said. His mom said,
Maybe a different building, a meeting place, central headquarters.
She looked back.
You two trail a block behind us again. Come on, Dev. No more talk.
They approached their target very slowly indeed, taking a circuitous route, creeping up, trying to stay silent. The street was gritty with dust. Not like it was when traffic was on it all the time. The breeze picked up, and the scent of rain grew stronger. His eyes watered with it, as if in sympathy with the clouds. As they approached the next intersection, He raised his scope to his eye and checked the street with night vision. The sidewalks retained the day's heat, as the woods did not. Even the buildings glowed a little. The faint glow in the sky from the lit building was too bright to look at directly, so he kept his scope aimed away from it. He wasn't interested in that, but was looking for the shape of a human body. A movement caught in his other eye made him swing his rifle at it, but it was only a coyote, a lone one, trotting down the streets without hesitation, already used to this new freedom to roam the cities and towns at will. Dev turned until he saw Sierra and Jackson, waiting motionless a block away. Nothing moved beyond them. He lowered his rifle. His mother crossed the street, Dev trailing her by a few feet and scanning for danger. She went across and stopped 100 yards later, pointing. He saw an alleyway then. Payson didn't have a lot of them, but there was one here. Maybe it had been designed because of the government offices, or for the jail itself, for delivery of prisoners without the public seeing it. For them, it was going to help in getting closer to the jail undetected. For a moment, it struck him as amusing that he was about to break into a jail, but the feeling didn't last long. It wasn't an amusing situation. It was dangerous, and his mother and Sierra were both here, risking themselves. Part of tonight's effort was for their protection, to get rid of this danger that lurked so close to home. But part of what they were doing was helping other people be free to run their own lives. He sure hoped the Payson people would be grateful they'd bothered. Walking in the alley was noisier than walking down the street, but as they approached the noise of the generator, their footsteps were lost in that louder noise. The glow from ahead lit the side wall of the building his mother pointed to. It was the jail. There were no windows at all, which he should have anticipated, but hadn't given a thought to. He had hoped they could communicate with the men inside, get information on how many guards there were, but that was not going to happen, it seemed. Across the street ahead and to his left was a lit-up building that didn't take the night vision scope to see. A man came into view on the sidewalk in front of it, the lit end of a cigarette glowing briefly. Dev could take him easily, but if there were another 10 or 20 inside that building right now, that would be the worst possible thing to do. When the man turned away, he felt his mother push gently at him, and he moved right, toward cover, out of sight of the man. Had the other group, the one Kurt was in, acted yet on the north side of town? He saw no sign that men were being drawn out of the building ahead to help fight off an attack, but who knew what kind of communication capabilities they had? There hadn't been any hand radios on the bodies up at their neighborhood. He watched until the man moved away, along the side of the building, and then he turned and softly whistled the signal for enemy to Sierra. He got his mother's attention, pointed back, and walked back several yards until he knew Sierra and Jackson could see him. Dev held out one finger to his side and pointed. One man, that direction. He hoped Sierra had the goggles on and could see the signal. Then he returned to his mother. She pointed up. High on the wall of the jail, there was a vent or a window shuttered with metal. She jostled him and pointed more emphatically at it. Then she pointed at him. He understood. She wanted him to check it out. Could he get up there? Well, there were problems. A double fence surrounded the jail, and, when lightning lit up the sky again, he saw there was coiled barbed wire on the top of that. The bolt cutters could handle that. Easiest to cut through both the fences under the barbed wire, he imagined. Easier for the jailed men inside to get out if there was a hole in the fence. They might be hungry and weak and incapable of climbing. If they existed at all. Of course, if they didn't exist, if they'd been taken outside town and executed, then there wouldn't be anyone guarding the jail, so that would make breaking in much safer. Useless, but safer. Okay, how to get up to that vent thing? A microwave tower stood fairly close to the jail wall, but the building roof was metal, and if he climbed the tower and leapt to the roof, which he'd have to do, there'd be one hell of a clang.
but there were also a couple of sheds, maybe containing heating or cooling equipment, and the building had guttering, and an exhaust fan with a protruding housing. The guttering wasn't a straight line. It took some right-angle turn so that it did not go straight to the ground. It went from the roof along the wall, then turned out, then turned down again. With some luck, and if the gutter was attached securely, he thought he could get up there. He would have to leave his rifle on the ground, or better, on top of that shed there, so he could jump straight down to it if everything went bad. He saw his mother was watching him. He nodded, then mimed cutting with scissors. She nodded back and turned to wave Sierra and Jackson to come up. Sierra passed him on the sidewalk, moving toward the lit building to look it over, and his mother backtracked a few yards to watch behind them. Dev motioned Jackson up to the spot he thought best, and reached up to touch the bolt cutter sticking out of Jackson's pack, and touched the fence with the toe of his boot, coaxing a metallic whisper from it. He was less inclined to speak this close to the jail. He hoped those vents, he saw two now that he was closer, were connected to the holding cells, not to wherever a guard might be. Snap, snap, snap. The links of chain fence being cut, so his message had gotten through to Jackson. The noise was loud, much louder than footsteps, and Devlin brought his scope to his eye again to look back behind them. But all he saw was his mom, and the glow of the lit building. He realized that if they had electricity in the jail building, the heating or AC boxes would be glowing, or even the exhaust fan, but nothing was. So the electricity must be only for that building over there. Dev shrugged off his pack and leaned it against the outside of the fence, keeping his boot touching it so he didn't lose track of it. Silence. Jackson grabbed his arm and tugged it once, telling Dev to go down and to his right. Then he must have pulled on the fence, for there was a sound of stressed metal. Devlin dropped to his knees, felt ahead, and found the intact fence, which was shaking. There was a hole, and damn, but the ends of the fence were sharp. He jabbed himself pretty good, and in his trigger finger, dumb. He switched hands to find where he should crawl through. Pushing his rifle ahead of him, he crawled along, hearing Jackson grunt with the effort of holding the fence back. The cut fence ends pulled at Dev's clothes, but he pulled harder and made it through. He heard a sprawing of metal as the fence was released. It tapped him lightly on his boot soles. Dev made it to his feet and looked around, first with his eyes, then with the scope. Sierra, taller than his mom, was walking backward toward him. Okay, time to move. Dev wove along the narrow space between two of the equipment boxes and looked up. His gaze traced one potential route to the vent, and then a different one. The walls had a texture, like metal siding, but the slope was always down, intended so that he'd not be able to grip. Someone had designed this to foil escape. Okay, so up on this box over there was closest to his goal. He shouldered his rifle and jumped for the edge of the thing, grabbing a lip of metal. Then he used brute force to pull himself up, wishing he had climbed trees more often for the practice. A minute later, he was up on the roof, panting. Okay, put the rifle down. Remember, this is where you left it. The shadowed gap between here and the guttering was awfully wide-looking from here, but it was still his best bet for making the roof. He hoped the gutter wouldn't pull away. He shuffled to the edge of the box and had to choose. Lean for it, or jump to it? Leaning would be quieter, though he'd feel like an idiot if he misjudged that gap in the dim light, and all he succeeded in doing was falling down head first. Deep breath. Then he tried to relax everything but his arms as he fell forward, arms outstretched right in front of him. It wasn't as far as his fear in the dark had made it seem. He'd reached less than a 45-degree angle when his hands caught the downspout of the guttering, but then they slid, and he passed 45 degrees. Uh-oh. His fingers caught on something, a brace or something that attached the downspout to the wall. Okay, okay,
I can get this.
He worked his hands around until his grip was more secure on the guttering, and then he stepped off the edge of the utility box and swung himself off. Clang! His feet hit the part of the guttering that angled out from the wall here. Surely it wouldn't hold his weight. Maybe for a second? He needed that boost it could give him. You know, I should have stood on Jackson's shoulders and done this. I'd be in the same spot. If this failed, that's what he'd try next. He kicked at the guttering, let go with one hand, grabbed for a higher handhold, got himself up a foot. He swung his other hand and reached and found the lip of another bit of hardware. As the guttering crumpled under his foot, his hand closed around the bracing with a good enough grip. His toes were braced against the building now, and all he had to do was pull himself up a little more, and his feet would reach something that would support him. He couldn't see a blessed thing right now, but he knew the next handhold was there. His feet scraped and scraped while he held on for dear life. There it was. Okay. Phew. Now he was balanced. His weight spread out on three points, which was way better feeling than dangling by one arm and flailing the other. He took two deep breaths, and then he canted his head back. He was closer than he'd hoped to the sloped roofline. 10 inches. Anybody could make that in his sleep. It wasn't quite that easy, but he did wrestle himself up far enough to let go with his left hand and swing it up and catch the roof's edge. That was metal, too. In another minute of struggle, he gained the roof and lay on his back, head upslope, presenting the lowest possible profile. It was hot up here. Gosh, if they were holding men in there, they'd have been baking all the time. He hoped they had been getting water. Otherwise, he'd be breaking into a building of dead bodies. But no, the stench would have hit him already were that the case. He looked down and saw two figures, Sierra and Jackson, he believed, down below him, inside the fence. His mom must still be in the alley, keeping watch. He gave them a thumbs up, a very sore thumb, and his fingertips were sore too, but the thumb hurt most right now. He sucked on it and tasted dirty metal. Okay, crawl up the roof, and over the little crest he'd seen, and then down to the vent. He glanced to the other side of the building, making sure no one could see him from the street of the lip building across the way. He couldn't see the street, so he assumed not, but he could see into the windows of the second floor of the building, so he stayed low as he crawled up. Way easier than getting up here had been. He hit the peak in no time. The slope down to the vent was very gradual, just enough slope to keep rain running rather than pooling. He checked his progress twice as he neared the vent by hanging his head over the edge and looking. The second time, there was the exhaust fan, just under him. He reached down and lightly wrapped it. Plastic, not metal. It was a sizable circle, and he hoped to God it would hold him. He was higher now than when he'd first gained the roof, and a fall onto any place but his feet could kill him. Probably a fall onto his feet would break his legs. Then where would they be? He reversed and eased himself down, putting slightly more and more weight on his boot tips on the fan housing. When he had most of his body weight on it, and it hadn't broken, he let one foot down lower, looking for the inside lip on the lower side. He'd rather be on that curve than this outside curve. Lightning flashed again, and he imagined how he looked, perfectly visible to anyone glancing up here. A dark, man-shaped thing against the white plastic fan housing. His foot found the spot he wanted, but he couldn't get his toe in far because the fan blade was there. He kicked this way and that, got it to spin a few inches, and then there was the space he needed. Okay. Trust to luck and God smiling on good intentions. He let go of the roof. He kept a hand splayed on the wall and inched the other hand toward the vent window, which wasn't but 8 inches to his right. Then he stuck his fingers up into the spaces between the louvers, metal, not plastic this time, and spread the fingers of his hand until that gave him a grip. He thought he smelled human waste.
so this vent was at a bathroom? That wasn't what he wanted. Then, from the vent, he heard voices. Chapter 11. At first he heard only the murmur of voices. More than two, he quickly decided. Then, as he shifted his right hand to press his ear to the vent, he heard,
"There! Didn't you hear that?"
It sounded high and nervous, but it was male. "Probably a bobcat on the roof," a second man said. "I wish they'd bring our dinner. What the hell is up with that?" "Dinner, breakfast, and lunch," said a morose voice, lower in pitch. "Brulluper," said the second voice. "Like brunch and supper. Get it?" "Fuck you," said the morose voice. If these were the invaders having him on, they were doing a great acting job. But he was sure it was the Payson men, in jail, as promised. He pressed his lips close to the vent.
"Hey,"
he whispered.
"What was that?"
said the nervous one. "A ghost," said a new voice, wryly. Risking a louder voice, Dev said,
"A rescuer. Shut up and tell me your situation."
There was a stunned silence, then a scraping sound, a rustle, and a voice closer.
"Who are you?"
"A friend. We're breaking you out of here."
"When?"
The other voices were all talking now, and the close one said,
"Shut up, you idiots. Do you want to make the guard come back here?"
The other voices faded away.
"How many guards?" Dev said.
"One, usually," said the voice.
"Armed?"
"Yeah," Dev said.
"Do you have any weapons?"
"We're in jail," the guy said. "They took our weapons."
"I mean not guns, anything, bedposts, pipes you can yank out of the wall, whatever."
"Not a thing. They built it to keep people from doing any violence." "Well, that made sense."
"Okay, here's what we'll do," Dev said, and then he had to think up what they'd do, because he really didn't know.
"Okay, right.
Give us 10 minutes to get ourselves in place, and then make a noise, make a fuss, pretend you're fighting, whatever. Get the guard back to where you are."
"And you'll do what?"
"Break in, subdue the guard and let you out. 10 minutes. Starting now," Dev said.
"Okay?"
"Tell him okay," said another voice, fainter.
Dev took it as a promise. He stepped back up on the top of the exhaust fan housing, pulled himself back onto the roof, slid down the steeper roof slope almost to the end, and let himself dangle off the lowest edge. Then he dropped to the concrete below him, about a 5-foot drop. His knees felt the landing, but his legs did not break.
"Damn. His rifle. I need a boost," he said, making for where he'd left it.
Sierra met him.
"Here,"
she said, stooping to make a foothold with her hands. She boosted him up and he felt around, grabbing the rifle butt, and then finding the strap. He pulled it to himself and said,
"Okay,"
and eased him down as he reeled his rifle back in.
"What up? We heard you talking, but not what you said."
"Good," he said. "It seemed like I was shouting. You sure they don't hear me across the street?"
"Certain of it."
"Okay, good. That means we can talk back here. We need Mom. We have to figure out how to do this in like 9 minutes.
"I'll get her,"
Sierra said, and left. "So what did they say?" Jackson said, coming up in the dark.
"That they'll create a distraction in 9 minutes.
The invaders probably didn't leave them any way to tell time."
"No."
Sierra and his mother came up.
"What's the plan?"
Sierra said.
"We need to know if the front door is unlocked," Dev said.
"And get to it," Jackson said. "More fence to cut to come at it from back here. Maybe more than 10 minutes of cutting." His mom said,
"There's that guy on guard across the street, but he seems to have to check the whole building, so he's moving around it. We can wait until he's gone around back."
Jackson said, 8.5 minutes left, and counting. Sierra said,
"I'll go look for him. Signal you if he's coming this way."
"No, wait,"
Jackson said. There's a reason Wes gave me the nod for this mission. He shrugged off his backpack. Sierra said,
The bolt cutters, right?
No. I'm the only guy in the neighborhood with a good silencer.